The show's Nevada Backcountry. The hosts have changed this week. It's me, Henry Evans, and my dad, Jerry Evans.
Bigger and better, right?
Yeah, the greater. let's jump right into a little bit of housekeeping, local stuff going on. I want to make sure I get a quick plug for the Muley Fanatic Foundation Banquet. It's coming up March 2nd. Space is limited, so make sure you get tickets and or a table for the event. You can do that by getting in touch with Chris Costin. His phone number is 771-9592, and he can get you set up with a table or tickets for the event.
Okay, speaking of local stuff, too, this is kind of what is referred to as the indoor season.
Correct.
Part of that being the Wild Sheep Foundation hunting convention that just took place. Somebody from Indow came up and handed me a flyer on this, so I'll go ahead and mention it. I checked the website, and as far as I know, there are still some youth hunting and fishing licenses available. Those are for 12 to 17-year-old kids. So if you have a kid, 12 to 17, and you want to get them out hunting and fishing and do it for free, there may still be some licenses available. Just check with Indow.
Yeah, and some of those licenses were actually purchased with funds donated to the Muley Fanatic Foundation.
Friday and Saturday was the commissioner's meeting. You get any news out of that?
Yeah, well, this one was in Vegas.
Okay.
This was down in Las Vegas, and this was the final round for some of the proposals that have been put forth. And yeah, at the risk of being a little cryptic about it, I got a text from Mr. Catalano that it looks really good for hunters. And I believe he's referring to seasons, tag allocations. We've talked about it before on the show. I don't know how to read that, except I will say, I'll piggyback on that and say he is out today because he is actually at the state indoor championship shoot in Las Vegas. You mentioned indoor season. It's all coming to a close here shortly. In fact, we're doing this show a little ahead of schedule so I can hit the road and go shoot at the Vegas Indoor World Championship for archery. They're also wrapping up the National Archery in the Schools program shoots and the S3DA shoots. For most of the indoor archery stuff, this is kind of the end of the season before we transition into the fun stuff, which is the outdoor shoots, the 3D shoots, stuff a little more up my alley.
Do you have to wear a shirt to kind of looks like a box of detergent like Tide to shoot in those tournaments?
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, there actually is a dress code. So I don't know about I'm not going to look like a NASCAR car out there. But yeah, I gotta put on like a polo shirt or something.
Well, first of all, go back to that. Was that a tease for an upcoming episode of Nevada Backcountry about the good news for hunters coming up?
Yes, I kind of glossed over that part. Yeah, we are going to dedicate an entire episode to covering some of the changes. I guess there's enough information there. Again, I haven't seen it yet. The text from Dave was in all caps, so I take that to be a good sign.
Good news, good news. I know you want to mention this because I got my deer measured that I took in Unit 192 during the illegal weapon season, but I took it with a bow, and I had it measured, waited the 60 days, and lo and behold, it qualifies for the record book. And now, down at the bottom.
Well, you're a couple pages in. As of right now, it looks like it'll be in the book, which is pretty darn cool. You got hammered on the score, though, with that difference between net and gross. And I'm assuming most people listening know the difference, but essentially, you are penalized for a lack of symmetry with a typical mule deer. So yours had one.
Well, excuse me.
You should have picked better. Yours had one stunted fork. And they penalized you on that. But yeah, it looks like you're going to be in the record book. For those that don't know, record book comes out every 5 years. So as of right now, to get a typical mule deer in the record book, it's got to be 160 and 1/8. That will get you in there. Now, yours is a couple inches above that. However, I kind of doubt that many have been killed since the last edition came out in 2021. But they basically put it out every 5 years. So you'll go through the process now, submit yours, and I believe the next one is coming out in next year or the year after. And we'll see if it's still qualifies.
Well, you know, I started going through the book online and checking because as I found out you needed somebody to help you with the show.
Yeah.
I found some real interesting stuff, and you and I got a little bit of hate in our hearts right now for Idaho.
Oh.
And I have a son that lives up there, too, a good son. He has said to us that Idaho is really good at selling tags, not so good at managing their elk. So one of the things we'll talk about if we get a chance to is quote-unquote trophy hunting. But going through the trophy book, I found some really interesting stuff about different states. And I didn't go through the entire United States. I wanted to focus on basically where I look to hunt every fall is Utah, Arizona, and Nevada. Those are kind of eliminated Montana, although nothing against it, and Colorado. But I'll get back to those states one of these days. But here's a little bit of trivia for you. Elk are scored typical or non-typical. And guess where most, probably two-thirds of the record book elk in Nevada are taken from, two counties in particular. You want to take a guess?
Yeah, we talked about this, so I already know the answer, but they are White Pine County and Lincoln, I'm assuming.
Right, exactly. Those counties border Utah. 12 of the top 24 typical elk taken in White Pine County and 7 of the top 24 taken in Lincoln County. And that accounts for, well, added up, that's 19 out of 24 taken out of those two counties.
You know what I find fascinating, to interject real quick, on the elk thing? I think it's a testament to how Nevada manages our elk herds. If you look at most of the big elk that have been taken, it's from the last couple decades.
Exactly. And that's one thing I was going to point out about Idaho. I'll get to in just a couple of moments. A couple of more interesting stats about elk in Nevada. The record, 425 and 3/8 Nye County. I've seen exactly where that was taken from. I was hunting down.
Table Mountain area?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right there on the west slope of Table Mountain.
Unit 16, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that was 428. I'll just call it 428. And the non-typical, 424 and 6/8. Here's a little gender identification. Women have taken the number two elk typical and the number one and two elk in Nevada. Sue Ann Kinney took the number one and Cindy Marquez number two.
Yeah.
Two women, number one and number two, non-typical elk.
Again, what counties did those come out of?
Oh, White Pine, the number one elk came out of, and Lincoln County, the number two elk.
Hmm.
Non-typical.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, mule deer, most of the records in Nevada are older records, going back to about the 60s. Occasionally, you'll see one from like 2019 pop up in there. But for the most part, mule deer, most of the records are from, geez, three, four decades ago.
Yeah, we always hear about how good mule deer hunting used to be in Nevada. But I tell you what, because we need to take a break, I want to get back and finish up on some elk, and then I'll tease with this question, which is, how many inches separate the record typical mule deer and the record non-typical mule deer in Nevada, on average? So we'll do that when we come back.
Nevada Backcountry is brought to you by Hunt and House Archery Center over off Longley. They're still doing their buy a flagship bow, get a dozen arrows on the house. So stop by, shoot some of the new bows, and walk out with a dozen arrows. Any arrow on the wall comes with a flagship bow now. The show is Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Out West Buildings in Fallon, She Sheds, Trophy Rooms, Man Caves. Got a bunch of different names. They've got them all. Go see Irvin at Out West Buildings in Fallon. Where'd we leave off? Elk?
Elk in the western states. We'll get to mule deer in a second. We'll answer the question. A lot of difference between typical mule deer and non-typical. But wanted to go back to the states and, we're again, concentrating on these western states. And you and I both were at the Wild Sheep Foundation, and you and I both were not happy with trying to get a license in Idaho this year. I got bounced out of it twice, and here's the frustrating thing is you have to buy the license, but then the system fails, and you've bought yourself a license, but you don't have an opportunity to hunt in Idaho. I actually got back to them and said, look, I'm happy to buy a license anytime I can hunt, but if I'm not going to hunt, I don't want to have to buy a license. Your system failed, not me. It kicked me out twice. And we were at the Idaho Fish and Game Department booth at the Wild Sheep Foundation, just standing there about ready to share a little bit of our love with them. And there was somebody else doing the same type of complaint.
Yeah, right next to us. In fact, man, when you led into this, I was like, where's he going? Are we going to talk about all the stuff we stole from booths? Okay, so gripes about Idaho. Yeah, it's a horrible system. You think they'd have it under control at this point, but they absolutely do not. And what was funny was the guy was sitting there trying to tell us, no, that didn't happen. No, it worked fine this year. It absolutely did not. Anybody that went through what we went through, everybody saw it again. They kind of, they've screwed it up. But that being said, let's talk about the elk thing.
Okay.
In Idaho. Can I give them kudos first?
Sure.
Okay. You can hunt elk over the counter in Idaho. That's it. That's all the kudos I have.
So you cross over the counter behind, I don't know what you're talking about.
No,
there.
I mean, you can buy an elk tag over the counter in Idaho. So, okay, so that's kudos. They have enough animals, supposedly.
They sell a lot of tags. And now, what I found in looking at the records, the state records for Nevada, Idaho, Utah, is that the last big elk taken in Idaho was in 2007. If you take that particular elk out of the equation, most of the big elk, and I'm talking elk that are 380, 390, there were some taken over 400, but it's been many, many decades, not years, since that was done. So the last big elk taken in Idaho was in 2007. 8 elk total over 400 inches. Last one in 1981. But...
Well, yeah, the counterpoint to that, as we talked, I've had my hands on a rack from a bull killed a couple years back in Idaho that went 417. So while the record book is a good, call it a snapshot of the quality of animals coming out of the state, it doesn't tell the entire picture. There are plenty of people that are extremely tight-lipped about
protective.
Where they hunt. Protective, yeah, and don't want to cough up spots, and certainly don't want their animal entered into a record book with their name associated with it. So I think there are, I'll call it sleeper units there in Idaho that are still pumping out some pretty good animals, but people are extremely quiet about it.
And one of the reasons, and I think this goes back to a Steve Ranella show or a couple of these quote-unquote celebrity shows that are filmed in Idaho, and your brother, my son, complains about how many people, and we saw it too when I hunted elk with him 2 years ago up there in the Panhandle area, just how many people there are. They sell a lot of tags. I don't think, even though we may know of a few instances of people that don't get their elk into the record books, I just don't think they're managing the elk the way they used to.
I would agree with that. I would say also, you know, the thing we have going for us in Nevada, there are definitely some units with thick timber that are harder to survey. However, for the most part, an elk herd on the landscape in Nevada stands out. They're pretty easy to find. Versus a majority of Idaho, you're talking about thick, old-growth timber. It is extremely difficult to survey elk herd populations in most parts of the state of Idaho. So I just don't think they have a very good handle on it. I don't know. I get the argument. If they sell enough tags, that's more money for boots on the ground research, for aerial surveys, etc. So I understand what they're trying to do, but I'd have to agree with you. I think there are too many tags being sold.
All right, let's go to Utah and Arizona. Utah, real quick, has 25 bulls over 400 inches, typical and non-typical, and all taken since 2000.
Whoa, okay.
So two 418-inch bulls were taken in 2020. And, of course, the world's largest wild elk, 478 and some change, the spider elk taken on Monroe Mountain. And, again, I was lucky enough to win the lottery 1 year.
Yeah.
First year I put in for that and hunted Monroe Mountain. That elk was taken about a mile south of where I was. And I took an elk on the first day because I'd been chasing a bull elk for 15 plus years. And at the end of the first day, took one that was at 360.
360 and change. Hey, I got to ask you real quick, though. What was their take? Did you guys talk about the spider bull when you were over there?
So I just asked them where it was taken, and it was...
They didn't offer up anything on it?
No. They talked a little bit of, what's that guy, Darren somebody, and he supposedly spends $1 million a year hunting, meaning buying governor's tags in the western states,
man,
or all over the place.
Yeah.
And he's a conservationist. That money goes to conservation. Again, I say more power to him. I'm glad there are people out there that have that kind of money that maybe they could buy the governor's tag for $50,000. He bids $100,000. He gets it or more. And it goes to wildlife conservation.
I meant controversy on, I don't know if I
Mossback?
Buy.
Mossback?
Well,
outfitters?
No. On that elk in particular. Right, so no sheds ever.
They've never
turned up any sheds on it. Nobody has trail cam pictures. Nobody has pictures in general of this thing. It just all of a sudden showed up one day. So I don't know. There's something goofy going on there.
Are we talking politics here, these conspiracy theory things?
No, I mean, think about it. Some of these big, like the potential new, what was it, New Mexico elk that that kid killed.
Oh, on the ranch.
Was that New Mexico? Yeah, was that
yeah.
New Mexico? Okay, so he had 4 years of sheds from that bull.
Right.
He had hundreds upon hundreds of trail cam pictures of that bull, and then finally got lucky and connected.
I remember seeing the video of the spider elk, but maybe it was video
from
that.
It was during the hunt, though. That's what I'm saying. There's the controversy. So
maybe
you guys weigh in. Send us a message on social media. It's at Nevada Backcountry on Instagram or Facebook. Let us know what you think. Personally, I come down on the side of that was a high fence elk that got loose. I don't think there was any...
Or transported?
No, I don't think there were any hijinks as far as, you know, setting that guy up for it. I think, honestly, they probably spotted that bull a day or two before the hunt. And thought, holy smokes, let's camp out on this thing. We got whoever coming in, you know, a couple days here. We'll put this thing down. But I do find it extremely odd that a bull of that size, not one shed, has ever been turned up.
That is odd. I was thinking you were going down the path of one of these farm-raised elk up in Saskatchewan or someplace in Canada.
They flew it down there and let him whack it?
Well, they transported it in a horse trailer or something like that.
Oh, no, I don't think anything like that. But I think that was a high-fence elk that got out and got loose. That's my opinion.
Okay, even if you eliminate that one, though,
yeah,
all those big bulls, say, call it 24 bulls taken since 2000 in the state of Utah.
Absolutely, a testament to management.
Yeah, you get an elk tag there, I should have bought a lottery ticket. On average, that particular unit, the Monroe Mountain unit, that was a muzzleloader tag I put in for. It started on September 22nd, as I recall, and it was how I always dreamed elk hunting should be, where they're just bugling left of you, right of you, and you're just going in through the dead timber, and it doesn't matter how much noise you make. They make a lot of noise. On average, the resident, local resident, it takes 24 years to draw that tag. That's
I'm amazed
like our...
you got out of there with your tires intact.
I did get a few dirty looks from people because that's what people asked. How long have you been putting in for it?
1 year.
This was the first year.
So
look of disgust and walking away.
Yeah, cue the music. Let's take a quick break.
Wait, let me finish with this. Arizona, just real quickly, 14 elk over 400 inches. One of them was at the booth for Diamond Outfitters at the Wild Sheep Foundation, and most there also taken after the year 2000.
Yeah, absolute testament to good management of elk herds in the West. After the break, despite their phenomenal management practices when it comes to elk, I'm going to talk about I'll call him the knucklehead of the week from Utah. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
And welcome back. It's Nevada Backcountry. Jerry Evans in for Dave Catalano. Henry Evans here with me. Both those guys are going to be down shooting at an archery tournament in Las Vegas. One thing I want to mention before we get back to the show is if you didn't apply by January 31st, you don't have an opportunity to apply in Wyoming. They have kind of the most convoluted, weird system that, and I won't go into great detail other than if you're a non-resident, your deadline to apply for elk hunting or turkey was January 31st. So we're past that now, but residents have longer. Go figure that one out. And we should give a quick mention and a shout out to our sponsors of Nevada Backcountry.
Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. Now available in 243. Great youth rifle, great backcountry hunting rifle. I'm excited to get behind one of those and shoot it when I can. Now, less exciting news. Knucklehead of the Week Award, Senator Mike Lee from Utah. You know, to many listeners of this station, he is probably put on a pedestal. While I think he's got some really good ideas in the conservative arena, this is not one of them. It's Utah State Bill 3117. It's, again, one of these, I'm sure he thinks it's well-intentioned, but it's basically removing federal control of public lands in Utah, which then they could be sold at auction. In the past, you've had energy companies that, ironically enough, Mike Lee, when he was an attorney, represented, trying to store radioactive stuff in Utah. This is one point of contention I have with the current Republican Party. I'm a big public lands guy. I don't know how, as a party, we got from Teddy Roosevelt National Parks to Senator Mike Lee. Let's sell all of this to energy companies, mining companies. I disagree vehemently with him on this. That's something you can chime in on. I will plug the website real quick. It's howlforwildlife.org. I highly encourage listeners to go and sign up for their newsletters. You'll get a weekly email regarding all of this stuff, everything from the Catalina Island extermination plan on mule deer to Washington's right to hunt bill.
Let's talk about that in a moment, but I'll give you an example of why. First of all, let me preface it with humans are humans. And I'll give you a perfect example, which will offend some people. Rush Limbaugh. I carried his show back in Bangor, Maine on my FM talk station, WVOM, The Voice of Maine. And yet, in 2000, well, when he was going deaf, which was around the year 2000 or 1999, in order to continue to use the Pretenders, My City Was Gone theme on his show, because they filed for a cease and desist and got it, they, I would say forced him, but it's not really being forced if you accept it and do it. They made him donate $50,000 to PETA, People for the Ethical
eating
Treatment
to, of Eating of Tasty Animals.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. So he donated $50,000 to PETA then. 10-year deal, and that's just me as a supposition. Fast forward 10 years, around 2008, he was doing public service announcements for the Humane Society of the United States, not your local dog pound. The extremely anti-hunting, all hunting, duck hunting, bird hunting, whatever hunting you can think of, this is an organization that is dedicated to banning hunting of any kind everywhere. Humane Society of the United States, Rush Limbaugh voiced public service announcements for that group.
There has to be a price for animal cruelty. The helpless cannot be left without defenders. Well, this brought me into contact with the Humane Society of the United States. I've been impressed with what I'm learning about them. This organization's on the front lines with police and prosecutors to put the worst of the worst animal abusers behind bars. There is plenty we can argue about that we must argue about, but not this. That's why on this issue, my little cat Punkin and I offer these kind words for the Humane Society of the United States.
And keep in mind, anybody that hunts is considered an animal abuser by the Humane Society of the United States. But there's more.
I've noticed something lately. There's a new alliance forming out there. It's a positive one for the sake of America's traditional values and also for the sake of animals. Now, increasingly, it's not the case. The foremost conservative spokesman on the subject is probably Matthew Scully, who has published a book about the human-animal bond and also penned an essay for the Humane Society of the United States.
I am reminded of when Paul Ryan, former Speaker of the House, a Republican, started calling himself a conservative. Calling Matthew Scully a conservative. Matthew Scully, yeah, he wrote the speech for Sarah Palin when she was the VP nominee under John McCain, another, see my air quotes, Republican. Matthew Scully was the driving force behind banning baiting of bears in Maine. Conservative? Nah, not so much. Which, to me, says I'm taking these hunters for granted. He was always talking about constitutional rights. There are 41 states that have a constitutional right to hunt, provided that you can legally hunt, you don't have any offenses that would keep you from hunting, but yet, taking those people for granted and supporting PETA and the Humane Society of the United States. So keep in mind, everybody is human, we all have our flaws, but to me, he seemed like one of the ultimate hypocrites to talk a conservative and a constitutional game when essentially he supported one of the most hated by hunters organizations because of what they do and what their lifelong goal is to do, and that's to ban all hunting.
You hit the nail on the head with it. Oftentimes we get caught in that trap of thinking that the Republican Party or conservatives at large are a monolith, and the fact is we're not. I always kind of equate it to rural people and city people. And the fact of the matter is, Rush Limbaugh, while he was a great voice for conservative principles, I doubt if he knew which end to point at the target.
Mm-hmm. That's a good...
So, you know, it just is what it is. And same with Mike Lee, you know... 99.1% of the time, I might agree with Mike Lee on stuff, but this public lands thing is a screw up on his part. Plain and simple. So there you have that. Now, good news, though,
that
in the political realm.
That axe is so sharp right now. We have ground it down to a razor's edge.
What did you say a second ago? 41 states have a constitutional right to hunt?
If I said 41, I was mistaken. It's actually 21 states have a state constitutional right to hunt for anyone that is legally qualified to hunt.
Yeah, well, kudos to Washington. It's on the docket now. Washington is looking to become another state where hunting, and it's goofy how they worded it, it's hunting, foraging, something else, and fishing, constitutionally protected rights
under
in
the state
of Washington.
Huh. And that's odd because Washington is about as blue as you can get.
Exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of that, and politics, a little bit of that is, I referred back to those years of 2008, 2009 when I was working for SCI. There was a lot of interaction with Wayne LaPierre and Chris Cox. As we record the show today, the last day of January, it is the last day for Wayne LaPierre to be the head of the NRA. A long overdue change necessary there. He was basically, It was a slush fund for Wayne and the top executives. They either took the money and enjoyed it, or they were moved out of the director's positions with the NRA. So end of an era with NRA. As long as I can remember, the NRA was Wayne LaPierre as being the face of the NRA.
Well, he's another one. Did you see what he spent some of the money on?
I don't have the list at the top of my...
One of them
was a new house in Texas.
Yeah, well, okay. So, yeah, I mean, he was spending money on all kinds of stuff. But another perfect example of this, I'll call it like the milquetoast voice of conservative stuff or gun rights or whatever. So one of the things he bought was a $4,800 Gucci handbag for men. Can you imagine hunting with a dude that spent $5,000 on a Gucci handbag? I mean, this guy, he doesn't belong in the woods. It's this big city. I think there are people that get into politics or lobbying groups or whatever, and we may agree with them on a few things, but it's big city people. They're weird. They don't belong in the movement, period.
You don't have a handbag?
No, not a Gucci one.
Oh, that's a satchel. And this happened under the Trump. Since we're we are going to be hated
Trump,
by the end of this
another
show.
Another one. Soft.
You remember the bump stock ban? That was under the Trump ATF, and that's going to the Supreme Court. Anybody, your former military, a bump stock does not turn a gun into a machine gun or any of the other ridiculous arguments that were made. And the ATF, during the Trump administration, banned bump stocks. That case is before the Supreme Court. So we'll see where that goes. The ruling will come out in June.
And let me soften some of the hate real quick. While I might have some beef with Don Sr. and his bone spurs, Don Jr., you and I have hunted with a guy in Montana, hunted elk, who then a couple seasons later took Don Jr. hunting. And I will say, to his credit, the guy that you and I hunted with said he's the real deal. He'll go. He is not one of these in it for the look type guys. He will hunt hard. So, hey, kudos. Not all of them are the same.
Yeah, I wish he had more influence on his dad. And Wade Lemon in Utah, who I took the elk with in Utah, he was in some hot water, but we'll get way off track and sidetracked. But real quickly, baited a bear, and baiting bear in Utah is illegal. And he did that with Don Jr.
Correct,
who was considered to be a victim of that because he had no idea that that was going on.
So enough political griping. After the break, why don't we get into a little bit of trophy hunting? I noticed you had an article there, something about lion hunting. I'll give my soapbox spiel on the defense of trophy hunting. And then let's talk a little bit about marketing lingo versus actual real innovative stuff coming out in the archery world right now. The show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of the show. Man, we got way off into the weeds there with the political stuff. If we offended anybody, I'm not sorry. That's your problem, not mine. But you can text us and let us know at 884-9910. Now on to lighter subjects.
Well, hang on a second. I was going to get in my ditto.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm going to get off subject here real quick.
No! Make it,
real quick. I remember when doing that show and finding this audio of Rush playing it for these people that I was interviewing for SEI. One thing I never want to be is like them. Them meaning the left, the loonies, the anti-hunters, the Democrat Party in general, is I never want to be like them, and I never want to make excuses for those people that are supposedly on my side of any particular argument. Again,
agreed.
We're all human beings and we all have our flaws, and I just took that as extremely hypocritical, as I did the NRA and Wayne LaPierre and Chris Cox for supporting Harry Reid when he was running for office in Nevada. So with that, period. Next subject.
Okay. Moving on, what's the last truly innovative product that you bought in the hunting marketplace? Do you remember?
I bought you those sticks, those shooting sticks.
Quick sticks, a little connector trekking poles thing,
No, I can't think.
I remember the first time I got a pair of Kennetrek boots. I went, holy smokes, my feet are finally comfortable. Well, fast forward, I am shooting a Prime RevX or RVX 36. So for those that don't know, Prime, it's a smaller archery company. Tim Burnett got me going on these things at Hunt and House Archery Center, sponsor of the show. So for those that haven't shot a Prime bow before, I'd encourage you to do so. It's a really unique design. It's not just marketing hype. So this Prime bow I'm shooting, I'm going to be shooting at the indoor tournament in Vegas coming up here this weekend. The grip is exactly centered on the riser. So when you picture a traditional compound bow, for all bows except for Prime, the grip of the bow is going to be in the lower two-thirds section of the riser where you hold the bow. So it's going to be really top heavy after you break the shot. They tend to fall forward a little bit. Prime puts the grip dead center of the bow. And I've bought bows before. Go ahead. You're looking at me goofy.
Well, typically your sights are in the middle of the
bow. Dead center of the bow.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say this is something incredibly innovative. I've heard all the marketing lingo over the years with bow companies, how they, you know, they're changing the game and they're this, that, and the other thing. I will say this is like, I'll go back a decade or more, getting my first pair of Kennetrex. I shot the bow and instantly you notice a difference, the way it draws, the post-shot feel of the bow. But I wanted to plug them on the show real quick because I do think that they are doing something extremely unique that nobody else in that marketplace is doing.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Is that a hunting bow or a 3D archery bow? Either or.
Either or, yeah. Okay. Where's I got that? Mine in goofy target colors for shooting indoor. But, you know, they have, I mean, Tim hunts with them. And he's a big proponent of the bows. He finally wore me down. But you can go to Hunt and House Archery Center on Longley in Reno. I would highly encourage you to shoot the prime bows. Again, it's not your typical run of the mill. We changed some colors. We made an extra cutout in the riser, and now it's a game changer. It really is something unique.
I don't think I've ever had a different bow other than Bowtech. Started with a Bowtech. I've been through a half a dozen or more. I use Bowtech like Bowtech.
Yeah.
Typically, a company has a background story like Kennetrack. That was a guy, Jim.
Wingem.
Yeah. Wingem, that came from Schnee's.
Oh, did he really?
He had worked at Schnee's.
Okay.
So what's the story with this bow company?
With Prime, I honestly don't. I know they're based in Michigan. Everything's made in the U.S. A smaller kind of startup company. They've been around for a little while. A couple unique things that they do while everybody has kind of migrated to plastic limb pockets. They continue to use machined aluminum. So they're uber durable. So there's that's all the background I know on them. Okay. Out of Michigan.
Yeah, and it's funny, with all the gear that we've got and go through, I can't think of anything truly innovative. Again, we are sock and shoe snobs.
Very true.
Me with my old feet and as much walking in the mountains as we do, that's one thing that's very, very important to both of us. You know, the Onyx app is used by just about anybody. In fact, remember the guy up north of Via, out in the middle of nowhere, living out there,
yep,
in practically a plywood/tarp shack, and pulled out his Onyx map to show us where some antelope were.
Yeah, I would say Onyx is in that category as well. There's a bunch of different apps now, but I still think Onyx kind of has a market cornered. But yeah, I mean, in order, I would go my first pair of expensive high-end hunting boots, packs with a meat shelf. Because before that, it was like, well, you bought an REI backpacking pack or whatever, and you just threw all your hunting stuff in it. So actual high-end hunting packs with a meat shelf, Onyx, and now I'll give it to Prime Archery. Those are the big, of all the stuff I've gone through over the years, those are the truly innovative products that I've seen.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to shame somebody.
Go for it.
Because I do have something coming up, and we'll see how much use I get out of it. And it's not in particular for hunting game animals. It's more for hunting predators. And that's a thermal rifle scope. And
oh,
Russ,
yeah,
and Larry, are you listening?
Name and shame.
When is it? When is it getting there? I'm going to swing by the shop today on my way home and just check to see. But I found that, too, with some of these companies. I'm trying to get a mount to get the Picatinny rail off my Ruger Mark IV Lite so I can put on this other mount so the HoloSun sight that I have will sit right on top of it.
Okay.
And just get that extra weight and that height of the Picatinny rail off that pistol. So a couple of things I'll be getting here, but out of stock. And I've been checking for about four or 5 months. And I think everybody hates this today. Just to be able to pick up the phone and talk to somebody as opposed to sending those emails and then you wait a week, 2 weeks, or you never get a response whatsoever.
No, this is the lighter segment. You got to tone that down.
Oh, and understood at this particular point, SHOT Show going on. SCI will kick in here this weekend as we record this show. And again, the end of the indoor season will be coming here pretty quick, and then we can start to get outdoors. Just real quickly, as we wrap it up, what are you hearing about Chucker? I know Andy McCormick at Legacy has been out getting quail like crazy. Leave a few for the rest of us guys,
oh,
Andy,
yeah,
if you would. Yeah, but how's chucker season? Have you heard?
Chucker season? Well, actually, as this goes to air, it was a good chucker season. It was a good waterfowl season. Birds across the board. It was a really, really good season. You know, this one coming up, holy smokes, a couple days ago, I was playing cornhole in my front yard in a tank top and swim trunks. So I think this season coming up might not be great. We're definitely going to need some of that spring wetness if we're going to have good recruitment. But this year, this last year was one for the record books for sure.
Okay. Well, next week, Nevada Backcountry, I will send you an invoice for this, son.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for sitting in for Dave. Dave, you're probably going to stream this and hopefully you're shooting well at the state shoot right now. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget Truck Envy for all of your truck supplies right there, South Virginia in Reno. Traction boards, winches, lift kits, you name it, they've got it. Go to Truck Envy. Coming up after the break here,
Gun Talk on 99.1 FM Talk and 92.3 FM Talk.